turn the microphone on. Hello, everybody. Good evening. How are you doing? Yeah, it's a JMAC Live. We haven't had one of these for a while. Something new. Thought we'd try it out on a Tuesday night. Thank you so much for joining us. And please take a minute and say hello. Let me know where you are listening in from tonight. We are on TikTok again tonight, and you know how that can make things interesting. So we're on TikTok, Twitch, YouTube, LinkedIn, Facebook. What else is left? Twitter. Going out live tonight from Utah to talk about some very important issues. The most important being that of school shootings and mass shootings. And I want to get your thoughts for sure here. Ryan says, joining from my basement. Well, thank you. Thank you for joining us from your basement, Orion. Michael Shelton joining us from Ogden on the YouTube. Hello. For those of you on TikTok, let me know where you are listening in from. I see Luke and Mark McPhee. Many of you on YouTube, this is going to be your first experience with us. I do post pre-recorded videos on YouTube, but getting set up to where I can go live from my podcast, where we can take in comments and everything else, it's not the easiest thing in the world. And so on TikTok, I won't be able to put your comments on the screen, but I can definitely read about them. So again, say hello. Let me know where you are listening in from. And I'm here from Lehigh, Utah. Couple of updates. I hope that you had a chance a week ago Saturday to listen into some of our marathon broadcast, the JMACathon. We, and by we, I mean me, we broadcasted for 14 and a half hours. Our plan was to go 12, but then for every donation that we received above $25, we were forced to go another 10 minutes. So we went 14 and a half hours. We interviewed a bunch of people. We interviewed Evan McMullen, and we had a fantastic reunion with Amy Iverson, my former co-host from KSL News Radio. We have since cut up a lot of those interviews and posted them back on social media. So if you missed our reunion with Amy Iverson, it's worth a listen to. You can go back and listen. If you missed our interview with Evan McMullen, you can also go back and listen to that as well. January Walker joining us tonight saying, excited to hear about your solutions on the Second Amendment. Solutions is a big word, January. I definitely want to talk about it, and I want to bounce around ideas. Some of them I think are solutions, but I think more than anything, we kind of have to have a heart-to-heart, especially with those who are big fans of the Second Amendment like I am. And so that's part of my intent tonight, is to make an appeal to those of you who are supporters of the Second Amendment like I am, and to predict the future. I have right here, from Amy Iverson, actually, this was the last Christmas present she ever gave me, Magic 8-Ball. I can tell you what the future of gun control is in the United States if we stay on our current path. And I don't think it has to be our future. And I think that we need to choose leaders who can actually get past the name-calling, the dehumanization, the manipulation, and actually get to some solutions. I believe that is possible. I also believe that if we don't than the writings on the wall. Heather Voss joining us on Facebook saying, who are you running against? I keep seeing you on TikTok running against Chris Stewart in the 2nd District for Congress. January Walker, who you see there, she is running in the 4th District against Burgess Owens. Good old Burgess Owens, who is refusing to debate now. I guess that's just the thing. If you don't want to debate, you just say no. And will there be consequences? No. And that's one of the problems with our addiction to a single party system in the state of Utah. No consequences. But I'm getting sidetracked already. Already sidetracked. Laura Jones joining us on TikTok. I've got TikTok over here to the right, so I apologize if I don't see your comments right away. But thank you so much for joining us. And again, go back and listen to the J-Macathon if you missed any of that. January Walker was also on the J-Macathon. And please take a moment, if you haven't, to make a donation to our campaign. Go to jmacforutah.com. We need your money. We need your money for signs. We need your money to help get the word out about our campaign. If you support what we're trying to do here at all, if you've been with me during this time at all, please take a minute and make a donation. And that it'll go a long way. Even $5 will make a huge impact on our campaign. So please take a minute and do that. And don't do it just once. Anytime you got an extra fiver or something, it's going to take a lot to create change, and to get a legislature that is actually working together. And I guess I'll ask this question. I'll ask a couple questions here just to start, just to talk about where our government is right now. Do you know, are there any like major legislative bodies who are getting together right now? I don't know, like the President of the United States, the Senate, and the House getting together to figure out how to stop or reduce mass shootings or gun violence in this country? Is that happening? I saw a story where it was like bipartisan group gets together to talk about mass shootings, school shootings. It was 2 Democrats and 2 Republicans. This is the most dysfunctional government. It is unbelievable to me that when there is a crisis, and this is a monumental crisis, and our country is going through a bunch of them right now, that instead of legislators and elected officials rushing together to find solutions, what they do is they run to the right and the left and they point fingers at each other and make no attempt at solutions. Nothing. How many things can you think of right now where our legislature and our president should be in a room? They should have different committees. Yeah, they do have committees in Congress and in the Senate. I've heard of them. I know they have committees. And they should be getting together and talking and hammering it out. Inflation. How about that? Any big groups of legislators getting together on inflation? Mass shootings? Anybody? I mean, how many things can we sit here and say where our government, where the American people are suffering, where we need help, where we need change, where our government should be acting, and instead, what are they doing? It's like watching a wrestling match. They both go to their corners and they point at the other side. And they use it for political hay. That's why they do it. Because what happens is they run over and they get on their tweeter and they send out a nasty message about the other side. And it's got a link to their fundraising and how terrible the other side is. And they misrepresent the views of the other side and they use the most inflammatory rhetoric that they can so that they can get us to donate. And we say, oh, I'm going to send them money. For what? What are they doing that they have earned your money and your trust? The fact that they have differing viewpoints on an issue should not stop them from working on that issue. If that was the case, we wouldn't have a founding document. We wouldn't have a constitution. If the fact that you had to agree with each other in order to get together and talk, we wouldn't be a country right now. For that matter, we're hardly a country. It just blows my mind that we sit back and we think that this is the proper way to run government. And we're more and more sending people who refuse to listen or talk to or discuss anything with the other side. Our stated, thank you for the like, Nick, our stated goal from both sides, from both parties, is not to work with the other side. It's not to find common ground. It's to take total control. Think about this. That's their design. The goal of Republicans right now is to take total control of government so that they can run over the other side of the country that disagrees with them. And the role of Democrats is to take total control so that they can run over the other side of the country who disagrees with them. It's madness. It is madness. So just starting out, anytime we face a crisis, I mean, is it too crazy to ask that Congress is over there working overtime, getting together, shooting around ideas? You know, get out the whiteboard and the first thing you say is, okay, there's no bad ideas. And you just start writing stuff down because kids are dying, man. You just start writing stuff down. And this is functional? This is... Orion, make up your mind. You're on TikTok and Facebook. Make up your mind, friend. Can you tell? I'm a little fired up. But everybody is after yet another shooting. Everybody is. The problem is we're apparently not wise enough, or I don't know what it is, to choose people who could actually get together and make something happen. January says duopoly, dysfunctional design. You know, it can be functional. It can be. We've seen it in the past where it's had a lot more function than it's had now. I think that it's addiction to the duopoly by the people that really enforces this, because there are no consequences now for bad behavior. None. No consequences. You want to go against what the people want? Doesn't matter, because of the addiction to the two-party system. I think that's where the greatest problem is. That's what George Washington predicted would happen. January says the GOP and Dems use events like these school shootings to make power grabs. Absolutely, they do. Orion says, if Americans didn't do something about mass shootings after Newton, they never will. Newton should have been the watershed moment. It was supposed to be the last time. Again, I've long given up on the idea, and it may sound terribly cynical, that politicians want to solve these problems. What they want to do is they want to, as January pointed out, they want to use them to divide us so that we can be manipulated into continuing to support them as though somehow that is going to have an impact. And I think at least everybody who is participating in this broadcast right now can agree that the people who are there right now, who have the power, are not going to do this. They're just not. And so it's time to do something else. Thank you for sharing the stream, Libby. It's time to do something else. Now, let me talk to those of you who are pro-Second Amendment for a minute. And I know we have a range of people listening on the show today who have differing viewpoints on gun ownership. I am a proud gun owner. I am a concealed carry owner. I carry everywhere I go that it's legal. I started to do so back when I started to get death threats for sharing my opinions on the radio. And now it's just my state of being. I feel naked if I'm not carrying. And I am thankful for the right to be able to carry and to protect myself. And I believe in the right to bear arms. I believe that it's an important part of the Constitution. I know and understand why the founders put it there. I do not believe that it is immutable, unchangeable. But I do believe that just like anything in the Constitution, that we can't just ignore what the Constitution says to get what we want. We still have to follow legislative processes to get what we want. Anytime we ignore our founding document for whatever reason to get what we want, then we dilute it and it loses power and the strength of our country and our laws are diminished. But this is what, to all my gun-loving Second Amendment friends, I want you to see the writing on the wall here. And I've shared this before, and I think it's so important. The right to bear arms is on its deathbed. I don't know if that's probably not the best terminology to use, but the right to bear arms is hanging from a thread right now. You may think it's strong and alive and well, but I am here to tell you that it is not. I'm here to tell you that the right to bear arms, if things continue down the path we're on right now, that the right to bear arms will go away. I can guarantee it. There's not even a single doubt in my mind that it will go away. And you may be saying, well, they're not going to come for my guns. The Constitution, as I said, is not immutable. And somebody said to me the other day, they don't know what that word means. It's not without ability to be changed. In fact, the Constitution is designed to be changed. And the Constitution has been changed, thankfully, many times. So just do some math with me here for a minute. Let's say that we continue down this path. We have mass shootings at school, at work. A certain population of the country says we need to get rid of guns, or we need to get rid of handguns, or we need to do background checks, or whatever. They offer their solutions. And then Second Amendment, my Second Amendment loving friends say, no, you can't change the document. The document says shall not be infringed. And so you can't do anything. It's absolute. You can't change it. This is our future right now. Can everybody agree? This is our future. This is, as long as we have the leaders that we have, as long as we can, this path, this is our future right now. So mass shootings continue, gun violence continues, and Second Amendment people will say, no, you can't touch it. And then people who want to change it will say, no, it's not absolute. We want to change it, but nothing happens. What do you think is going through the mind of children right now? What do you think is going through the mind of teenagers right now? My kids grew up in a mass shooting environment. My kids grew up having to do mass shooter drills. And if you have teenagers, so did yours. And some of you probably had to go through those drills yourself. I remember in Texas, because I was on the radio on a news channel, one day I get a text message from my daughter. And she says, Dad, we're on lockdown and there's talk of a shooter. Do you know anything? And she knows that I'm in the media. So I go and I use every resource that I have. I'm freaked out, you know, trying to. And I find out that something had happened several miles away. It was a police incident, and they locked down the school with an abundance of caution. But the reason I bring this up is because I want you to ask yourself, what is the eventual outcome of generation after generation after generation of children having to go through mass shooter drills, hear stories about mass shootings, or even experience them themselves? What happens to public sentiment after 5 years? You can see it in the polls. You want to look at the polls right now. What I'm telling you is going to happen is happening right now. And every year, it's going to grow, and it's going to grow, and it's going to grow. And my friends, we live in a country where the rights granted and protected by the Constitution can be changed. And my magic eight ball tells me that maybe it's 10 years, maybe it's 15 years, maybe it's 20 years. Whatever the number is, there will come a time where the children and the teenagers and the teachers and the adults that are all experiencing this problem will turn into one of the biggest tsunamis of public demand that perhaps you will ever see in your lifetime. And that tsunami will change or eliminate the Second Amendment. And you may decide, I'm going to go down with my guns. But to me, that is the guaranteed course that we are on right now. And the reason I bring that up is because I believe that the people who are making sure that this is going to happen are the pro-Second Amendment people who are saying, nope, can't make any changes. You can't, it's in the Constitution, shall not be infringed. Nope, 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 can't do it. Can't do this. Well, what about this idea? What about this idea? Nope, nope, you can't do it. As long as pro-Second Amendment people continue to block any and every effort to make a difference with mass shootings and gun violence, every time you draw a line in the sand, you are actually pushing that line closer and closer to losing the right to bear arms. That's the reality check that I want to share to you tonight. That's it. I believe that the people who are going to save the right to bear arms, there's only one group that can do it. And it's the pro-Second Amendment group. And the only way they can do it is to consider thoughtful, meaningful changes that can have a difference. If you simply draw a line in the sand, you are guaranteeing a loss of the right to bear arms. And I don't know how long that takes. 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, I don't know. I don't know if I'll be around when it happens. I don't know. But it's going to grow, and it's going to grow, and it's going to grow. And when it happens, it is going to be sweeping, and there will be no consideration for your desire to have a firearm. It will be overwhelming. That's what the eight ball says. David says, sadly, I feel even 10 years is optimistic. Michael says, I can imagine a generation that voluntarily turns in their inherited guns without losing the Second Amendment. Well, I can definitely see them turning in their guns, but they're not going to feel, in my opinion, that them turning in their weapons is enough to solve the problem. It's just not going to be enough. Nick says, what are some of your ideas for thoughtful compromise between pro and anti thoughts on raising gun purchase to 21? Nathan says, the Second Amendment has been infringed upon for many years and has been reinterpreted for years. Unfortunately, we need reasonable adjustments that both sides can live with, or we will lose it completely. It's exactly right. And this is what I just want to pound home for every pro-gun American. I want to keep and retain my right to bear arms. I hate the idea that I might lose a right that I consider to be precious because somebody else can't handle their rights. Just in general, that drives me crazy. That typically, the way that you protect freedoms is not by removing freedoms. The way you protect freedoms is by punishing the abuser of freedom, both as a punishment for them and a deterrent. Unfortunately, when the abuser of freedom is looking to be killed themselves and has no fear of deterrent, it makes the problem a lot more difficult. But in general, I can't stand any time somebody says, well, you have to lose your right because this guy over here can't handle his right. I hate the loss of freedom because of the abuse of freedom. That to me is something that we should, that is always difficult, always difficult. So when we talk about gun control, when we talk about ideas and solutions, I'm trying to achieve two things, and they may seem impossible to you, but I don't think they're impossible. I'm trying to protect the right to bear arms for the law-abiding, and I'm trying to reduce and eliminate as much abuse of the right to bear arms as I can. Those are the two things that we're trying to do at one time. Is it humanly possible? I think it is. But not with this group of people that we have in Washington. Not even close. Not even close. And both sides are guilty. You have the one side who, every time you mentioned any idea, they say, nope, shall not be infringed, shall not be infringed. They got a big sign, shall not be infringed, shall not be infringed. Not understanding that every time you do that, you are one step closer to it being infringed. And then you have the other side that the minute a shooting happens, they rush out with this litany of ideas that they keep repeating, but they typically give the ideas before we even know what happened and before we even know if those ideas would have solved the problem. And so it's like, are you just anti-gun? Because it seems to me you might want to wait until you find out the facts of the story. I mean, how many times have we seen it where they come out and say, I'll give you a, who was it, Beto O'Rourke or somebody who interrupted the governor of Texas? I'll tell you what needs to be done. First thing, universal background checks. The guy who bought the gun passed a background check. It's like, it's like you have your list of ideas and you're only gonna participate with those ideas. And then over here, you have the other group who's not going to listen to any ideas. And so once again, we get stuck. Jordan says, I support the Second Amendment and I don't own any firearms. As a libertarian, the threat of violence is an act of violence. We should all advocate for peace and liberty. The threat of force harms us all. Are there instant and easy solutions to stop mass shootings? No. No. There are not. And people who rush out and give very quick solutions before they even know what happened. I understand you want to solve a problem. I understand you want to stop this horror from happening. But I'm afraid that the magic eight ball doesn't bode well for many of your solutions either. And I'll give you an example. What was one of the other things that I think Beto yelled out? Banning of AR-style weapons. I looked it up. AR-style weapons are used in about 26% of shootings, mass shootings, since 2021. And I don't share that with you to say that we shouldn't consider looking at a ban. I share that with you because the magic eight ball, again, so just like I said, anybody who's out there saying, nope, shall not be infringed, is getting you closer and closer to losing the very right you're trying to protect. Those people who think that banning AR-style weapons is a viable solution, and that's all they want to do, those people do not own a magic eight ball either. Because any type of weapons-based bans will just lead us to the next weapon. So let me give you an example. And again, Magic 8 Ball. Jordan says likes the Magic 8 Ball. Or let's do the finger snap test right now. So 26% of mass shootings occur with an AR-style weapon. Now, you should know AR-style weapons, they don't fire any faster than a semi-automatic handgun. They can be more deadly, though. The rounds, as they enter the body, can do much more. They can be more deadly, okay? So put that on the table, make it very clear. But let's say that you, and David says slippery slope fallacy. David, you can call this one anything you want, but tell me that this is not going to happen, okay? Tell me that this won't happen. We snap our fingers and suddenly there are no AR-style weapons. They're gone. And remember, a lot of these gun advocates or these gun control advocates are saying, I don't want to take away all your guns. I just want to take away AR-style weapons, and I want universal background checks and maybe high-round magazines. That's all I want to do. That's all I'm asking for. Just give us that. That's all I'm asking for. And that doesn't sound unreasonable to me. Those are all things that I would consider. But if you snap your fingers now and say all ARs are gone, remember, 26% of mass shootings were ARs. That means we're still left with the other 80% of mass shootings. And many of those mass shootings, by the way, ended up being worse with semi-automatic handguns than they were with AR-style weapons. So are you telling me that you snapped your fingers, ARs are gone, 80% of the mass shootings are still happening, and you sit back and you go, well, it's okay because we got what we wanted. We got rid of our ARs and our high-volume magazines, so now it's okay. We did what we needed to do. 80% of the mass shootings are still happening. You telling me that it stops there? You call that slippery slope. You call that anything that you want. But are you telling me it stops there when you still have 80% of the mass shootings still happening? No way, man. No way. So now the next cry comes. I don't want to take away your right to bear arms. I just want to take away your semi-automatic handguns. You see how it, and that's just a guarantee. It is just an absolute guarantee. And that is why I struggle with weapons-based solutions. Because anybody who's telling you that, oh, I just want to get rid of this type of weapon, either they're fooling themselves or they're just They just want you to believe that now so they can go after the next one soon, later on. Because the shootings are still going to happen. So here's what I want. And unfortunately, what I want is difficult. I want to know what it is in our society that is creating people who want to kill and be killed. And for those of you who thinks it's the guns that are doing it, that just doesn't make an ounce of sense to me. I have a gun now, so now, like, the gun is speaking to me. It's like my precious, and it's speaking to me, and it's telling me, it's always in my ear, you should become a mass shooter, you should become a mass shooter. I want to know what it is about our society that is creating people who want to kill and be killed. And I want, and this is something that I never hear, I have never heard this anywhere but here. I want to save the mass shooter before they become a mass shooter. By the time we hear about them, they're described as evil, they're described as terrible, they're described as monsters. But at some point, a year ago, 2 years ago, 5 years ago, at some point, they were just kids. My goodness, is there a way? And I realize that it's not going to be perfect. And it's the hardest path to go on. And I think there are other absolute tangible things we can do in the meantime, and I'll talk about those. But what is it, my friends? What is it that drives somebody to a point where they want to take a gun and go and kill young children and die? If we can't answer that question, then yeah, we'll continue to get rid of access to bear arms. We'll continue to go after the weapon, one weapon after the other, after the next. But that's not going to stop whatever it is that's happening in our society that is driving a group of people to this place. And will we save lives by focusing on, I will admit fully, and a lot of pro-gun people will not do that. I will admit fully, you're going to save lives by banning weapons. The problem is that I would like to keep around the rights that I have and not lose them because other people abuse those rights. That to me is one of the core, you know, beauties of our country. What is it that is causing people who want to kill and then die? Nathan says, mental health care is something that needs to be addressed as a part of a national gun violence discussion, and red flag laws may be issued to help those who could be in danger. And requiring meeting with a mental health care professional to remove the flag. I've got, and I realize we've already been going 47 minutes, but I think that this is so important that I want to kind of go through this. And I will get to actual physical, tangible steps, laws that I think can and should be entertained. But I want you to think about some of the larger issues first, all right? So we've already talked about the larger issue of what happens if pro-gun advocates just keep saying, no, you can't cross the line, no, you can't cross the line. I believe the end of that is the loss of the right to bear arms 100%. Then what happens if it's a weapons focused? So we just keep going after the weapon. Or whatever, what weapon are they using now? Okay, let's limit that. Oh, let's do that. Then we still are left with a society that is somehow keeping or producing people who want to kill as many people as they can and kill. Will there be fewer deaths? Yes, there will. And anyone who's not willing to admit that, I don't think they're being honest. But these are some of the realities. And do they turn to knives or cars or whatever else, right? So these are just some of the larger issues that I want you to think about as we go through this process. For those, there was an op-ed, I think it was in the Trib or somewhere else, who said, it's not mental health, it's not this, it's not that, it's the guns. I don't believe it's the guns. I've never believed it's the guns. I think it is culture. I think that there are things happening in our culture that we are not seeing. And that perhaps if we can focus on some of those things, we can make a difference. But if it's the guns, then you should not be able to find a culture where there are plenty of guns, but there are no mass shootings, right? I mean, is that fair? If it's just the guns, and if we didn't have the guns, we wouldn't have mass shootings. Is that fair? Is it, a lot of people think that. It appears that that's what a lot of people think. Well, I just wanted to share this with you. I don't share this with you to say that, see, because they do it, we can do it. I share this with you to demonstrate the cultural aspect of guns and how I think a lot of this has to do with the United States, our unique culture, and other things. I don't want you to think that I'm saying to you that because this country pulled it off, that means we can pull it off. I just want you to consider what I'm about to share with you. And that is, let me hit the right button here. Can you see that? Switzerland. Have you heard about Switzerland? Switzerland is fascinating to me. Switzerland has a stunningly high rate of gun ownership. Here's why it doesn't have mass shootings. This is in the Business Insider. Fascinating write-up. And again, please do not interpret this as me saying, see, they give everybody guns, so we just have to give everybody guns. I believe comparing one country to another is in many ways a fool's errand. But this does speak directly to those who say the reason we have mass shootings is because we have so many guns. That's all. So, Switzerland hasn't had a mass shooting since 2001. When a man stormed the local parliament, killing 14 people and then himself. The country has about 2 million privately owned guns in a nation of 8.3 million people. In 2016, the country had 47 attempted homicides. 47 attempted homicides in 8.3 million people. The country's overall murder rate is near zero. I can't even believe these numbers. It says the National Rifle Association often points to Switzerland to argue that more rules on gun ownership aren't necessary. I am not making that argument today. again, I share this with you to show you another culture, another country, who has an entirely different approach to gun ownership, and they get a different outcome. So let's consider everything as we go into this discussion, okay? In 2016, the NRA said on its blog that the European country had one of the lowest murder rates in the world, while still having millions of privately owned guns and a few hunting weapons that don't even require a permit. So let's learn about the Swiss and what they do. Because I thought, okay, then what they must be doing, as I read this story, what they must be doing are just the most in-depth background checks, limiting all types of gun ownership. My mind went to all the things that we hear here, right? Here is what it says. The insider took a look at the country's past with guns to see why it has lower rates of gun violence than the U.S., where gun death rates are now at their highest in the U.S. in more than 20 years, and the leading cause of death for children and adolescents. Remember when we talk about gun violence and mass shootings, we should not be excluding things that are not mass shootings. We should not be excluding suicide, death of children and adolescents. This story goes on. It says Switzerland is obsessed with getting school shootings right. Every year, it holds a shooting contest for kids ages 13 to 17. The name, this is the name, I'm not going to try and pronounce it. You know what's funny to me also about this is the Swiss are the, they're the peace-loving, right? They're the country that loves peace. I would have just guessed that they would have had no guns. However you pronounce that, is a traditional annual festival that dates back to the 1600s. Though the world roughly translates this to boy shooting, and the competition used to be only boys, teenage girls have been allowed in since 1991. The kids in the country flock to the competition every September to compete in target shooting using Swiss Army service rifles. They're proud to show off how well they can shoot. The competition values accuracy above all else, and officials crown a king or queen of marksmen based upon the results. Did you read this next sentence? Having an armed citizenry helped keep the Swiss neutral for more than 200 years. The Swiss stance is one of armed neutrality. I had no idea. Switzerland hasn't taken part in any international armed conflict since 1815, but some Swiss soldiers helped with peacekeeping missions around the world. Many Swiss see gun ownership as part of a patriotic duty to protect their homeland. That, my friends, is precisely why one of the reasons why I want and appreciate the right to bear arms. Did you see the next sentence there? Most Swiss men are required to learn how to use a gun. Unlike the U.S., Switzerland has mandatory military service for men. The government, listen to this, the government gives all men between the ages of 18 and 34 deemed fit for service a pistol or a rifle and training on how to use them. What? After they finish their service, the men can typically buy and keep their service weapons, but they do have to get a permit for them. In recent years, the Swiss government has voted to reduce the size of the country's armed forces. Switzerland is a bit like a well-designed fort. Switzerland's borders are basically designed to blow up on command, with at least 3,000 demolition points on bridges, roads, rails, and tunnels. John McPhee put it this way in his book, La Place de la Concorde Suisse. Near the German border of Switzerland, every railroad and highway tunnel has been prepared to pinch shut explosively. Nearby mountains have been made so porous that whole divisions can fit inside them. Roughly a quarter of the gun-toting Swiss use their weapons for military or police duty. In 2000, more than 25% of Swiss gun owners said they kept their weapon for military or police duty, while less than 5% of Americans said the same. In addition to the militia's arms, the country has about 2 million privately owned guns, a figure that has been plummeting over the past decade. The Swiss government has estimated that about half of the privately owned guns in the country are former service rifles, but there are signs the Swiss gun-to-human ratio is dwindling. In 2007, the Small Arms Survey found that Switzerland had the third highest ratio of civilian firearms per 100 residents. Let's see. Gun sellers follow strict licensing procedures. Swiss authorities decide on the local level whether to give people gun permits, so they keep it local. They also keep a log of everyone who owns a gun in their region, known as a canton, though hunting rifles and some semiotic long arms are exempt from the permit requirements. Police don't take their duty doling out guns license lightly. They might consult a psychiatrist or talk with authorities in other cantons where a prospective gun buyer has lived to vet the person. Interesting. Swiss laws are designed to prevent anyone who's violent or incompetent from owning a gun. People who've been convicted of a crime or who have alcohol or drug addiction aren't allowed to buy guns in Switzerland. The law also states that anyone who expresses a violent or dangerous attitude won't be permitted to own a gun. That's your red flag laws right there. Gun owners who want to carry their weapon for defensive purposes also have to prove they can load, unload, and shoot their weapon and must pass a test to get a license. Those are the main points of that story. So is it the guns? I think what you see there is a combination of culture, a combination of good legislation, and I don't know what else. Were you surprised by that story? I'm just interested to see if you were surprised by that. If the gun itself is the cause, this kind of puts a dent in that, doesn't it? Kind of puts a little bit of a dent in there. Heather says, training, permits, tracking, and red flag laws. Nick says, how does that compare to the U.S. and countries like Australia? Australia basically got rid of the right to bear arms. You can get certain rifles. I haven't looked back at their legislation for a while, but hunting rifles, but that's about it. David says, Nick Green, thanks for looking that up, by the way. Again, I don't share this with you to say, here is the end-all solution. I do share it with you to show an example of where you can have a society with a lot of guns, as long as you surround it with good policy, with a culture of appreciation, and who knows what else is going on. I mean, do they not have It doesn't sound to me like they have young people who want to kill and be killed. I didn't see that anywhere. Nathan says Switzerland seems to have better mental health treatment as well. Lots of other things that could absolutely be involved in that, right? And they did mention that they do have the ability to call around and see if that person has any psychiatric issues. So within there, there are some things. January says their culture is significantly different from USA. This is a great point. Because when people say, let's just do what Australia did, or let's just do with what Switzerland did, I believe in all of that, there is a denial of the history and culture of guns in that society. And that what we need to do is find solutions that work for the United States of America. And that when people just say, see, Australia passed a law, or when the NRA says, Switzerland has a bunch of guns and they don't have any problems, I don't think that that's being honest about the debate, for sure. Now, I put together a list. This is something that I've been working on, of things that I think right away should be considered. And I think a lot of my Second Amendment supporters are not going to be happy with me. But I think these are things that, where I'm willing as a gun owner to say, yes, these will have an impact. Will they stop the problem? No. But yes, they can have an impact, and we can demonstrate to people that we are willing to do something more than just sending thoughts and prayers. The first one on my list is raising the legal age to buy a gun to 21. To me, that is just a no-brainer. Now, can it be gotten around? Absolutely. We saw, you know, it's important to know that more often than not, when a mass shooting happens, 5 or 6 or 10 laws have already been broken. It's already illegal. These are safe zones. Guns aren't allowed in these zones. More often than not, the people who secured the weapons secured them illegally with ill intent. So sometimes we think if we just pass a law, well, they already broke 10 of them. It's already illegal to go in and shoot up a school. We need to find things that are going to have an impact. I believe raising the legal age to 21 is 100% something that can and should be considered right now. We know enough about the human brain to know that it is still developing between the ages of 18 and 21. And if you can't go and consume alcohol, but you can go and buy a firearm and as much ammunition as you want, that seems that's a little bit problematic for me. So right out of the gate, I would support raising the gun age to 21. Second, those of you who listened to my show my last couple of years on KSL News Radio, you know I got a lot of flack because I came out in support of red flag laws. We held a town hall. It got heated. We had a lot of the gun right advocates there. And it was a great discussion, I think. If you don't know what red flag laws are, this is where if there is reason to suspect that a gun owner is an imminent danger to themselves or someone else, then the authorities can temporarily remove those guns. Now, I want to make it clear that I would only support red flag laws under the construct of the Constitution of the United States, which requires probable cause and a warrant from a judge. And to me, that's just absolutely critical. And by the way, people lose property all the time right now. People are like, I need my due process. This is one of the things that people do not understand about our society. And they say things that sound right, but they're wrong. So somebody says, you can't take away my property. I need due process. The due process always happens after the fact, with the exception of the probable cause and the warrant. But as far as fighting for you, if the police come in and the judge issues a warrant and they roll in your house and they take your computers and they take your clothes and they take your boots and anything else because they suspect you of a crime. This happens every day in America right now with probable cause and a warrant. And people think, I need my... Your due process comes after the fact in those cases. You will go to a judge. You'll fight to have that stuff returned to you. It happens after the fact. So red flag laws with proper... a probable cause and a warrant from a judge, I will support that. Now, it is interesting to me when we had this town hall, we had it up at the Hinckley Institute, and we had somebody there who is considered, I won't tell you his name because he's not here to defend himself, but he is one of the primary lobbyists or supporters for gun rights in this state. I know him. I think he's a good guy. But when I said that we need red flag laws and it's constitutional as long as there's probable cause and a warrant, he said, we don't need that because we already have safe harbor laws in the state of Utah. Do any of you know what a safe harbor law is? A safe harbor law says that if you live with somebody, you can take their guns for any reason and march those guns down to a police station and make the police hold them. And you have no due process to get them back. And this is what blew my mind, is that this person was using this as an example as to why we don't need red flag laws. And I was sitting there flabbergasted because I'm like, you're fighting for the Constitution and you're supporting a law that has no probable cause, no warrant, no judge, and no due process. And they continue to make that claim in the state of Utah, that you don't need red flag laws because there are safe harbor laws. That is maddening to me. Maddening. But they just don't think that people are going to, understand how that all works. Let's see. This one is controversial. I've said this on the air. I have received flack for it before. I'm going to probably receive flack for it now. But please understand why I am saying this. And Heather says, and what if that person lives alone? That's a great point. I don't want to live in a society where anybody who I live with can just take my property down to a police station and I don't have due process. That is not a satisfactory answer to me. And it blows my mind when that is presented as a reason by Second Amendment advocates in the state of Utah that that's why we don't need red flag laws. That one blows my mind. Okay. All right. sorry. this one is important to me. But hear me out in case you're like, oh, I can't believe you said that. We need to allow teachers to arm themselves. And before you freak out about that, it's already legal in the state of Utah. It's already happening every single day in the state of Utah. Now, a lot of people, you will hear them say that this is a solution to mass shootings. It's not. And it is a terrible place to think that arming teachers or putting responsibility on teachers with a firearm to protect themselves is somehow going to stop mass shootings. I don't believe that for a single second. What I do believe is that any teacher who is willing to go and go through the concealed carry process should be allowed to carry a firearm to protect themselves. I cannot in my heart bring myself to a place where I can tell a teacher, yes, you have to teach at this school every day, but in that worst case, horrific scenario, you do not have a right to protect yourself. So in this case, I don't share this as an answer to solving mass shootings. I share it as simply this. When I carry, it's because I want the right to be able to defend myself and my family if something ever happens. My goal is to never, ever, ever, ever draw my weapon in a public experience. I hope and I pray that that day never comes. But if it does, and I am barricaded in a room with a bunch of other people, or it is a teacher who is barricaded in their room with their kids, I cannot tell them that you should not have the right to carry a weapon. I cannot. And you don't hear about it much, but in the state of Utah, teachers carry at school all the time. I know several teachers who carry all the time, and they are very glad to be able to do so. But it's not something that's announced. It's not something that is meant to be a deterrent. Just allow teachers to be able to protect themselves. Heather says they already do here. I am a former teacher and know a few or more concealed carrying. Yep, I know. Brandon says, probably most teachers will quit versus arming themselves. Well, it's not true. We are in the state of Utah. We have the right for teachers to, let me put it this way, Brandon. If you're saying that teachers should be required to carry, then yeah, I would expect most of them to quit. But that's not what I'm suggesting. I'm suggesting if you want to go get trained, get licensed, you should be able to carry. That exists in the state of Utah, and most teachers are not quitting. So let's see. He says also, unless the teacher has their gun drawn and ready 24/7, they will still get caught off guard. Well, they will, if they're in that classroom where the shooting starts in that particular moment, then yeah, having a gun on your side will probably do you no good. But in every single school shooting that has ever happened, there are kids in the next classroom, there are kids down the hall, there are teachers in other classrooms, there are teachers at other places Who am I to tell that teacher that they can't carry to protect themselves? I won't do it. I will not do it. And again, no way would I ever support forcing a teacher to carry. No way. But in the state of Utah, they do conceal. Orion says exactly, wait, let me see what he's responding to. He says exactly, escalation is never the answer. Really? You're in a mass shooting situation? What is your answer? If you don't have something to protect yourself, you have one choice. And that's die. January says, arming teachers, who will buy the guns and the ammunition? Again, this is a personal choice by the teachers. The teachers that I know who carry, they buy their own guns, they carry their own ammunition. And this is not, again, an attempt to stop mass shootings. This is allowing law-abiding teachers to protect themselves in a life and death situations. January says, where will the guns be stored? Typically are stored, the ones that I know, they are stored on the person of the teacher. There's all types of creative holsters that you can get, where you can wear a gun on all different parts of your body. Nick says, Jay might have a better perspective on this, but it seems like teachers who carry are footing the expense of the weapon and the ammunition. Yes, that is exactly what happens. January says, where will the ammunition be stored? Typically also extra ammunition is stored on your person. Sometimes it can be stored like in your purse. The ammunition itself is not a danger. So if somebody got in your purse or something else and they pulled out a bunch of bullets, there is no danger from those bullets. So, January says, how will we prevent accidental shootings from access to guns in schools? Responsible adults. As far as I know, and you can go back and check this, I've been out of the news cycle, for a long time, but as far as I know, there has been one incident with a teacher and her firearm, and it went off in the bathroom. One out of all of the people who conceal carry. Let's see. January says, the mass shootings we've seen are automatic weapons. Are the teachers going to match the force and also carry automatics? No, they're not going to carry automatics. And no, they're not going to match the force. But which would you rather have? Would you rather have nothing? Would you rather have a table, a chair, a book, or a fighting chance? That's all I'm talking about. That's all I'm talking about. They may be outgunned. You know, a lot of police officers, when they go running in first, a lot of our officers are outgunned at first. So I'm just asking you, which would you rather have? January says, will they always wear them? That's a personal choice. What I can tell you, with my experience with people who conceal carry is once you start to conceal carry, it just becomes part of who you are. It's like, you know, you do that dance, like my wallet, my keys, my purse, my wallet, my keys. Where's my wallet, my purse, and my keys? Well, for me, there's one more, and that is, my gun. And, so I can't remember the last time I left the house without it, because it's just, you just feel like it's there. You just know it's there. And I can tell you where it is. It's sitting right. I don't know if it's sitting right. I'll show you the holster right there. January said, is arming people in schools really only a solution to the only solution to bring to the table? January, you have been listening, right? I mean, I've presented raising the legal age to 21, red flag laws, which have been shown in many states to reduce suicides and reduce child violence, allowing teachers to arm themselves. I did not present as a solution. I presented it as an option for teachers as a last resort way to protect themselves. And I'm still not done with some of my solutions. Nick says, raise the age to 21, red flag laws, three arming teachers. Yeah, thanks, Nick. Yeah, Nick is keeping up. Orion says, we can arm the whole world. There will always be a faster gun. You can also arm police and teachers, but you can't arm them with courage. No, we saw that in this last one. There's still a lot of question about when the police went in. And, you know, I have a hard, it's hard for me to be critical of somebody who didn't go running in. When I know they have a family and they have, you know, Brandon says teachers have breakdowns in mental health or bad days. They are also potential shooters. Brandon, give me an example of in Utah where a concealed carry teacher has used their weapon. I think that's one of the things that people misunderstand. We get afraid of the gun itself. But when you look at the statistics of people who conceal carry, how many people who actually go through the process and conceal carry? Although now Utah changed it, so you don't even have to take a class anymore. So the number may change. But the amount of risk or accidents or incidents involving those who conceal carry, these are the law-abidingest of the law-abiding people. And the risk that they pose to the public is so low when you look at the statistics. And that's what I hate is we're the group of people that we're going to lose our rights because other people can't handle theirs. Drives me crazy. But again, I would never ask. I'll give you an example. My wife, she took the conceal carry class with me. She does not conceal carry. Maybe I shouldn't tell you that. She doesn't feel comfortable, and she works at a school, or worked at a school, just changed her job. I would never force anybody to do that. Never. But to tell somebody that in that moment, when it's you and a gunman, that you can't defend yourself in that moment, I can't do that. I can't bring myself to do that. Brandon says, until they are not, statistically, mass shooters are anomalies, can't predict the future. Well, mass shooters do fit some pretty consistent groups. Not all of them, but you certainly can. But again, to say to all teachers, You can't go out and get a license and lawfully carry and never have an incident. You can't have that right because one person decided to abuse their right. I hate that. January says we should pay teachers 80K plus a year, especially if we're going to have them carry and take down kids that they teach. Well, again, I don't like the way you have phrased that. I'm not asking any teacher to be a protector of children in a mass shooting. And Heather says the same thing. I think a lot of people are mixing up the argument of allowing teachers to carry or forcing them to carry. January says, prevent guns from being in the schools in the first place. Yeah, well, how do those gun safe zones work so far? How have they worked so far? I think that you're going to... you're going to have to take, do something that affects the problem in a much larger way. But I can tell you right now, safe zones in schools don't work. That I know for sure. David says, January, I'm concerned about you misrepresenting Jay's points. I'm not. I understand what January's saying. Maybe it's because I know January personally. I appreciate her commentary. So I'm glad she's here and I'm glad that she is, you know, if she's speaking back what she's hearing from me, then that gives me a chance to clarify. January says they don't have them. You can just walk into a school without being checked. January, I totally agree with you. Hardening of schools is an absolute possibility. I will tell you how it typically ends up because I have experienced it. I lived in Las Vegas and I lived in Dallas. And in Vegas and in Dallas, you had to get buzzed into the school. This is at an elementary level, middle school level, and a high school level. So the doors were all locked. And if you were a visitor, like, hey, brought my lunch for my kid or brought my homework for my kid, you had to be buzzed in. So you go up there, you buzz, the person comes over the microphone, hey, while you're here, you say, I'm here for little Johnny, he forgot his lunch, and they buzz you in. So if that's the point, January, that we need to harden our schools to that level, I think that's viable. What I will tell you, though, is that they always let me in. They never ask for ID. And there's no way for them to know what I'm carrying. So is it sometimes we think that it's a hardening, but when it comes down to it, it's not. So the implementation of it, if we're going to talk about it, is important. Chris says the same thing. Can't we secure schools the way we secure courts? There are places in the country where you have to go through metal detectors and do those types of things. Part of the problem with that is, though, that when you secure one location, if somebody is intent on killing as many people as they can and then killing themselves, they're not going to go to that school and go, oh, man, I can't get in because of the metal detector, so I'm going to give up on my plans to be a mass shooter. What's going to happen is they're going to choose another target. They're going to choose a softer target. That target can be outside where people are lining up to go through the protector. It can be out on the playground, back behind the school. So again, I think some of these things give us a sense of safety, but I don't know if they are actual solutions. Let's see. David says, it's sad we even have to consider adding security to schools. I know. I completely get why we're asking this question. It's just sad. January says, David, Jay and I both agree on Second Amendment and the solutions. I personally think if we have guns going into schools, we're too late. These are kids' lives. Orion says, I'm more likely to use my .22 and put the barrel in my mouth and pull the trigger than I am to ever need it to defend my home. I acknowledge the stats. I respect the stats. Yeah, not me, Orion. I'm the basically the sole breadwinner for my family. And I believe I have a right to my life. And if somebody is escalating things to where they want to take that away from me and from my family, then I have prepared myself. I view it much like I view an insurance policy. You know, I hope I never get in a wreck, but I've got an insurance policy if I'm ever in a wreck. I can't tell you what it will do to me if I do ever have to shoot and kill somebody. That might be something that emotionally wrecks me. I don't know. It might. I hope that I never have to find out. But if it comes down to you or me and my family, I have made a choice already. Some people wouldn't be able to make that choice. I don't know if I will in that moment. You know, there's the whole fight or flight. I don't really know in that moment. I've prepared myself to act in one way, but none of us really know for sure. January says, I do want to hear the rest of your solutions. Didn't mean to interrupt. Nick says, I want to hear your other solutions as well. Accountability to parents or individuals who recklessly allow access to firearms. We have seen a number of experiences where, and just recently, where the parents were so reckless, and we're finally seeing accountability to those people. We have seen situations. There was California where the people had no business owning or buying firearms, but a friend purchased the firearms for them. Absolute accountability for people who aid and abet and break the laws in this case. I will talk a little bit about universal background checks because they're interesting to me. You see so many of the shootings, the first thing that we find out is they passed a background check. Because one of the very interesting things, and I haven't done this for a while, I need to go back and do it. Maybe you can do it if you want to do it. But I went and I looked at and chronicled all of the mass shootings and how many of them would have passed a background check. And I think Orion already mentioned this tonight. The vast majority of mass shooters, it's their first offense. And that's why background checks, when it comes to mass shootings, is not a viable solution. Now, that doesn't mean that it's not a solution when it comes to other types of gun crime and those types of things. So I'm not saying rule it out 100%, but when presented as a solution for the type of mass shooting that we just saw in this last week, it's not. The other part about universal background checks is they require voluntary compliance. And you're not going to get it. So what's going to happen is the law abiding, who would already be passing the background checks, they're going to pay the dollars for the background checks at the trade shows or whatever else. They'll pay, right? Everyone will do it. But the non-law abiding, they're going to secure their weapons in a different way, like they pretty much do anyway. So the idea of, we always think if we pass a law, then people will follow the law. And so what you picture is two gang members at their trunk, you know, in some dark alley, conducting a clandestine gun purchase or gun sale, and one of them says to the other guy, hey, do you mind filling out this form and paying $60 so that I can get you on a background check? Universal background checks are not the answer or solution that they are presented to be. They are a voluntary compliance tool until after the fact. Now, if you find out after a shooting happened or after a crime happened that they purchased the weapon and that there wasn't a background check done, then after the fact, you can add other consequences and things like that. But as far as up front and expecting, you know, the bad guy who's not going to pass a background check in the first place to say, sure, I'll fill out your background check. That is a problem. Let's see. January says guns should be registered. I struggle with that, January, because of history and because governments are not always they don't always behave the way that they should. And if there is a database somewhere of every person who owns a gun and where that person is, I struggle with that based upon looking at world history. That to me relies on a trust that governments will always do the right thing. And I don't have that trust. I wish that I did. Let's see. Orion says, so we're clear. Jay will never stand in the way of your right to use a firearm to defend yourself. I'm just saying accidents are more likely than legitimate needs. So respecting the stats is warranted. Have no illusions of ever being the exception. I don't understand the text, January. Retype it. And if you have it in your self-sovereign identity wallet, it's not the government that knows. I haven't looked at TikTok tonight. I apologize. We're trying out the old TikTok live stream tonight. A lot of people checking in, but not a lot of comments. So those are, was there anything else that I had? I'm actually going to publish an op-ed with my ideas and solutions. The biggest one, though, that I would put on here, and we kind of talked about it already, but we should, as a government, both federal and state, be investing tax dollars, time, and effort to figure out what it is that is driving people to kill and want to be killed. Now, I have my own theory on this. This is not based upon, this is purely anecdotal. I realize we've been going a while now. We've been going for an hour and 41 minutes, but this has been a great discussion. And thank you for everybody who has been participating. And if I've missed your comment, it's not that I'm ignoring you. It's just that they're going by so quickly. So I apologize for that. There is something about our society that is making this problem worse and worse. Now, I think in some ways, it's just the fact that it's happening. And it just becomes copycat and copycat. I think that that's part of the problem. And the media is learning and police are learning how to report on these things to not glorify or give the shooter their moments of fame that they might particularly be looking at. We've seen there was a time when we told everything about the people. It's getting better. It's still not where it needs to be. But in my mind, there are some things in our society that are happening that are causing all of us to be angrier, to be caught up in conspiracy theories and you know, fake news and manipulations. And I happen to believe that if you look at the mass shooters, if you look at most of them, there is one commonality that I've seen in just about all of them. And that is that they are loners. This is an important clue. We live in a society now where it is easier and easier and easier to not have any regular interaction with other adults. And that is problematic. And it is in many ways unique to our country. Those of you who've traveled to other countries, you'll know that this exists some places and other places it doesn't. I was amazed when I was in London. Everybody was in the streets. Everybody was being social. I felt uncomfortable because of my social anxiety. I'm like, don't these people have homes? Don't they have some place to go? And it's because in London, their flats are so small and the weather gets, you know, it's rained so much. First sign of weather, they are in the streets and they are talking to people and they are social and they are, and in the United States, it is becoming, and it has been like this for a while, and it is getting worse and worse. It is becoming so much easier to just be a loner, work from home, only get your information from one stream of information. Social media then feeding that one stream of information from their algorithm. And being led down a path with nobody to check you. The one thing about social interaction in humans is that when you're out and you interact with people, I believe it is a mental health check all the time. People will say something that is a little bit off and other people are like, really? You really want to think about that? Because did you have this? And it kind of corrects you and you're like, oh yeah, you know, and you get feedback. But the biggest thing is that the people who you are with are people. They have real emotions. They have real lives. You know about them. You know about their children. When you're alone and you spend your time alone, people stop being people. They start becoming pawns. And I can give you examples of where this happens in your life. If it doesn't happen, then you're better than most of us. But I'll give you a perfect example of where it happens in most people's lives. Road rage. Look at who we become when we get behind the wheel and we don't know anybody else on the road. We don't know their name. We don't know their family. We don't know anything about them. And then one of them forgets to check their blind spot and they pull over in front of us. And not everybody, but many become so enraged that it's like you made fun of their mother. And they start honking and flipping you off and doing all of these terrible things. If that was a coworker in that car, if that was a brother, a sister, a friend, you wouldn't do any of that. Look at it with trolls on the internet. When you don't know any of the people that you're talking to, you don't know anything about them, and you can sit on there and you can type out the most ugly and toxic things about them. I believe that especially in this country that is so vast and it has become so easy to live apart and to live separated, that it creates a culture where we don't look at each other as human beings anymore. We see it in our politics. It's one of the reasons why I'm running for office. We no longer see that person across the aisle as a great American who just has a different idea about how our country should be run. They are evil. They are communists. They are socialists. They are terrible people. And they are obstacles to our path. This is what we're being taught by our leaders. This is who we are becoming as a result of the social media streams that become so refined. And then we do it on our own. Anybody who challenges anything we think, we block it. We don't want to hear it. And I think we are creating the perfect scenario where people do not see each other as people anymore. You're now an obstacle. You're now a pawn. To me, somewhere in that, and that's my completely uneducated assessment, somewhere in that, you will find an answer as to why our nation is creating so many who want to kill and then be killed. Just my guess. Nick says loners are finding other loners on the internet with loner ideas, violence, misogyny, racism. How to prevent lonerism with positive social support is the cultural question of the 21st century. I think that is so true, Nick, and so well said. So well said. Somewhere in there is the answer. And I think we all see it a little bit in ourselves when you get on the highway. We see perfect examples of I've told you this before. I had a boss. He was in his 70s. And this is one of the kindest people I've ever met in my life. His name was Ron. And treated everybody so well. Everybody loved him. When he got behind the wheel, he turned into Satan incarnate. He cut people off. He rolled down the window and yelled at them and flipped them off. This is a religious man. He was the worst driver and an aggressive driver. I had to drive with him once from Utah up into Idaho. And I finally kind of just crawled down into the floorboards and pretended like I was asleep because I was afraid for my life. And then the minute he gets out of the car, just great. Just no problem. Just the kindest, nicest man again. Oh, I don't know. It's just it's just amazing. Anyway, those are some of my ideas. Orion says, mandatory military service for young men. Not only will it socialize loners, the sociopaths can be identified, cataloged, lobotomized, and put into cold storage. David says, would prescription cars fix that? You know, I think I've been a huge fan of self-driving cars. I want self-driving cars here as soon as possible because I think that, first of all, just generally accidents will go way down. And I think road rage will disappear and we will become kinder and gentler people. I can remember when I lived in Dallas, I had this experience where I was a jet fighter on the way to work. Do you know what I mean? Like I never had my own lane. I was always maneuvering between the lanes. I'm like Top Gun. Oh, there's a space there. Oh, there's a space there. And I'm like, you know, I'm going back and forth. Oh, there's this. And, you know, I'm like Maverick on Top Gun. And a couple of times I realized that after this tense, you know, driving to work, that I'd get to work and I would just be like, you know, just like, oh, just not calm or anything, rolling up to work. And then a couple of times I realized that some of these people that I had passed, Like, I had finally got around somebody, and I'm like, this is awesome. And then I get up to the off-ramp, and he's in front of me. And I'm like, and finally I made this choice, and it was a physical choice. And I decided, enough with the jet fighting. I'm going to get on the highway. I'm going to pick a lane, and I'm going to stop thinking about my position in relation to everybody else. And I'm going to put in an audio tape or listen to music. And all of a sudden, Zen just came down over me. And ever since then, as far as driving is concerned, I've had no jet fighting. And I get to work peaceful. You still get frustrated with people because, you know, drivers can be frustrating. So then when I was at KSL and they finally made the front runner from Lehigh to KSL, then I would take the front runner and I would get to work just so peaceful. Just so ready to be nice and kind to everybody. Nick says, I was just telling someone yesterday I want self-driving cars after I can no longer drive because of blindness or lack of depth perception. Yeah, almost a direct quote of when you were on KSL. Yeah, we talked about that a lot. David on Facebook says, Jay, do you have an arena of ideas background for your streams? Not sure what you mean, David. Be a little bit more specific. So there you go. I've given you some of my ideas, some of the things that I would consider. And I will tell you this, if you send me to Congress, one of the things that I will guarantee is that when a crisis occurs like a mass shooting, I will not run to a corner and say all their ideas are bad and all my ideas are good. I will rush to a committee room and invite everybody there and say, let's put every idea on the table and let's work through these so that we can get to the business of saving the lives of children. Those people who are refusing to get together and to work through this problem because of their ridiculous, childish partisanship, they are complicit in the continued shooting of these children. And it's time to choose different. So I hope you will take a minute and make a donation. Go to jmacforutah.com and help us win this fight. And choose different and send different. Otherwise, this doesn't change. And the right to bear arms disappears in a couple decades. And when that happens, what happens to all the people who are gun owners who don't want to give up their guns? January says, a good suggestions. Keep it up. I hope you win. Everyone remember, January Walker is running in the 4th District. I'm sure that she could use your donations as well. You've heard a lot of her perspective tonight as well. David says, Jay, you say you want to compete in the arena of ideas frequently while campaigning. So I was wondering if that concept has been converted to background art form. Never mind. Like actually having, like maybe my background here should be an arena. Is that what you mean? Like this is the arena of ideas. That's an interesting thought. I hadn't thought about it. This image that I'm using right here is stolen. I don't know if it's stolen. It's not copyrighted. It's an image of a recording studio in New York. David says, yes, sir. Every once in a while, I give you guys a glimpse behind the scenes. Do you want to see what it looks like? It kind of destroys the magic. So I'll just give you a quick hit, and then we can go back. Here we go. It's beautiful, isn't it? It's beautiful. Nick says, I thought that was your basement. It's actually just a bedroom in the house. But anyway, everybody, thank you. Wow, 2-hour broadcast tonight. Thank you so much for your commentary and for your willingness. The one thing I love most about this show, and I get so excited about, haven't been able to do it as much because I'm on the campaign trail, is that I know that I will be talking to a group of people who have diverse ideas and they're not afraid to share them. And we're not afraid to talk about them here. And we don't name call. We don't destroy character. We actually discuss the ideas. And I absolutely cherish this. And regardless of what happens for my run for Congress, this will continue for sure. Orion says, ignore Rachel's cat. That's my daughter. It got out and is behind the green curtain now. All right, everybody, I'm going to let you go. Have a wonderful night. Thank you, everybody, for joining me. Go to jmacforutah.com, make a donation. And if you're listening to this after the fact, because most of our listeners listen after the fact, please, in the comments, tell me what you think about the solutions we shared tonight. Share your own solutions. And let's choose people who run together to solve problems instead of who run apart to point fingers at each other. I think that that would be really nice. Nick Green says good night. Sarah says good night. Everybody, thanks again. Have a wonderful night. And hopefully I will be back on Thursday night. Thanks again.